Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Louis Riddick, Dan Graziano, I'm Susie Culver. All right, guys, let's get started with more insight on one of the biggest moves of the offseason. You all remember this. Just as the legal tampering period kicked off in the countdown to free agency, the Texans shocked the world by trading all-pro wide receiver DeAndre Hopkins to the Cardinals. And now, settling in with his new team, Hopkins talked about the trade.
But going into this situation with a guy, a young quarterback, that I know is going to be my quarterback, you know, for the future is great. You know, we're able to build a chemistry. And hopefully I'm able to, you know, play more than, you know, three seasons with a quarterback. And I don't think I've done that yet. So, you know, I'm excited, man, just to see, you know, me be able to play with a consistent quarterback.
Do you see yourself sort of production-wise, numbers-wise, really blowing up this season?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, obviously I play with a lot of quarterbacks and put up great numbers and, you know, been in offenses that necessarily wasn't a pass-first offense. So, you know, myself, you know, being a receiver, of course, I see my stats going up. You know, we have other great receivers out there, Christian Kirk, Larry Fitzgerald, and a lot of other guys out there. But, you know, I definitely see, you know, myself having one of my more productive seasons.
We know Hopkins played with this spinning carousel of quarterbacks in Houston and produced with all of them. So there's little doubt he's going to connect with Kyler Murray. But overall, Rob, which team do you believe will have a better 2020, Cardinals or Texans?
I think the Arizona Cardinals will be in the playoffs this year. I'm not saying that they're going to win the division, but I think that the Arizona Cardinals have had a great offseason. You bring in Hopkins, you do the things that they've done on defense. You got Chandler Jones, the best pass rusher in the NFL right now. I just think that the moves that they have made this offseason makes that team a lot better moving into 2020. So for me, I'm going with the Cardinals on this. I think the Texans, look, every year they seem to be close, but just not, they don't have enough. And I think that Arizona is going to surprise a lot of people. Kyler Murray coming into his second year, having confidence, understanding what to expect. I think that combination of Fitzgerald, Hopkins, Murray, I think it's going to be pretty dynamic.
You know, Rob, I struggled with this one because I share a lot of your optimism about this year's Cardinals. I think they have the opportunity to be a real breakthrough team, and Kyler Murray, a breakthrough quarterback in his second year. I went with Houston, though, because a couple reasons. One, I think their path to the playoffs might be a little bit less difficult. The Cardinals are in a pretty nasty-looking division with the defending NFC champs of each of the last 2 years, as well as a perennial playoff team in the Seattle Seahawks. So that could be a tough division to slug out a playoff spot in. And then I look at the Texans having won their division 4 of the last 5 years, in overcoming an 0-3 start 2 years ago to do it. I think Houston has a coach and a quarterback that have shown us they know how to get to the playoffs. And I think, you know, Arizona has a coach and a quarterback that we think very highly of, but have yet to show us that. And that's why I gave Houston the edge here a little bit in this question.
Yeah, I think the Cardinals are going to have the better team between the two, between the Cardinals and the Texans. I don't think either one of them are going to make the playoffs personally, although I think the Cardinals are going to make big improvements this year. On the offensive side of the ball, obviously they're going to be much more dynamic and explosive on the perimeter. The question becomes, is the offensive line going to be good enough? Will they be able to capture the line of scrimmage and still stay balanced enough, a threat enough in the running game so where it's not all just on Kyler Murray? And then really, what is the big problem in Arizona is the defense. The defense was atrocious last year, and I know drafting Isaiah Simmons goes a long way towards helping them, especially, you know, improve on the second level in particular, but they got gassed as far as the yards they gave up. They gave up 23 points, what was it, 14 times, something like that, 23 or more points 14 times last year. I mean, that's just ridiculous. So, I mean, Vance, I mean, those guys are going to have to really improve that side of the football. Now, in Houston, you know, I know people look at the AFC South and feel as though it's a division that they've owned based on what they've done in the past, but Indianapolis is going to be there this year. As long as Phillip Rivers can regain a little bit of the things that made him who he was his entire career, namely not turning over the football, I think the Colts are going to be right there to be favorites to win the South. Tennessee is still going to be there. Ryan Tannehill, I don't think that's a flash in the pan. I think Ryan Tannehill is here to stay. We don't know really what's going to happen with Jacksonville. I think they're really a football team that's in a state of transition. But I don't think Houston's path to the playoffs is that easy, even in their own division.
Then let's spin it this way. Both teams equipped with super young quarterbacks. Murray was Offensive Rookie of the Year. Watson has proved to be magical time and time again. So, Rob, which quarterback has the higher ceiling, Murray or Watson?
This is a really hard one. So I'm going to get beat up on this one. But I see a young Russell Wilson in Kyler Murray. I see, but faster, more explosive, able to make plays down the field with his legs, breaking out of the pocket. We all know Russell Wilson and the things that he's been able to do in the past, has had a terrific career so far. Look, I'm not taking anything away from the other quarterback. I just think that Kyler Murray, the ceiling on him, he reminds me of Russell Wilson with his ability to move. And the NFL now has changed dramatically. It's a RPO league. It's kind of a college system league. It's movement, run pass option, all those things that go into these offenses now. Kyler Murray is going to have all the tools to excel in the modern NFL right now.
Yeah, it's hard to disagree with anything Rob said. I'm going to go with Watson because we've seen it. And this is sort of my tiebreaker here, right? He's only 2 years old. He's still just 24 years old. He's won his division a couple times. He's delivered a national championship in college. I mean, we saw him win at the highest level against the toughest competition on the college level. And we've seen him have success in his brief time in the NFL. So I see these guys as two elite level quarterback prospects. But Watson, having shown us more to this point, gets the edge for me when we talk about looking years from now and saying which one of these guys ended up having the better career.
Yeah, I think even what Deshaun has shown us to this point, Dan, I still think, you know, he has so much room left to grow still. So I still don't think you've seen the best of Deshaun. So I would pick him as well. I think the help that he is surrounded with, both in terms of protection that he gets. Now, remember, he has taken an absolute beating. Some of it has been by his own doing, but he's taken a beating so far in his career. And now just this past year, they take a guy like, you know, like DeAndre Hopkins, and they send him on down the road, which is just amazing to me. So, I mean, and so this is a guy who I think, all being things being equal, if he had the protection and the weapons, you give him the, you know, you get both of these quarterbacks, you set the table the same way. I still believe that Deshaun Watson has the higher upside. I'm going to believe Dabo Swinney. I didn't believe him originally when he said this guy is the Michael Jordan of college football. I didn't believe him then. I believe him now.
So now here's the question. Billy O, being the GM and the head coach, trading away Hopkins to Arizona, is that going to hurt Watson and his ability to have a number one receiver? We'll see. We don't know yet, but I think a lot of pressure is on Billy O this season because he's not only the head coach, he's also the GM.
So here's what we know. We know that Houston has speed and Watson has a track team full of receivers, guys like Cooks, Fuller, Stills, if everybody stays healthy. Murray has a sure shot Hall of Famer in Fitz. Now you add Hopkins. So they're all dynamic, but let's zero in on the wide receivers. Who's the best? Is it Michael Thomas? Or, according to Hopkins?
I definitely think I'm the best. I know I'm the best. You know, Mike, my boy, I love Mike. We was texting yesterday, but he know if I had Drew Brees my whole career, what these numbers would be. Julio Jones know if I had Matt Ryan my whole career. That's my boy. I trained with Julio, too. He know what these numbers would be. So, you know, those guys are definitely blessed to be in a position where their whole career they had a Pro Bowl quarterback that they spent, you know, multiple seasons with, you know, but I don't complain. I don't make excuses. I go out and work. Obviously, you know, my team won the division championship, man, 5 out of 7 years since I was there. And I think every team in that division went out and tried to get a DB every draft to stop what was coming to them every year. But, you know, nothing against those guys. But, you know, I definitely made 3 All-Pro first teams also.
Yeah, it's almost too close to call. They both rank at the top of the list when it comes to receptions, yards, and touchdowns since Michael Thomas entered the league in 2016. As Hopkins points out, though, he's caught passes from 5 different quarterbacks in that span, and for Thomas, just 3, and most notably, one of them was Drew Brees. Dan, who would you take as best wide receiver?
I'm a DeAndre Hopkins fan. Like, there are times where I look and say DeAndre Hopkins is my favorite player in the whole league. When I watch him up close, when I watch him in person, the things people don't realize about Hopkins, it's not just the spectacular. It's the nitty-gritty, the reliability, his determination, and I've talked to him about this, his devotion to the fine details of his craft, the placement of his feet, the way he moves his hands, how to locate the ball in the air before the defender does. He cares a great deal about being the best. So does Michael Thomas. I just, for me personally, when I watch Hopkins, I feel like he's my favorite player.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Michael Thomas. Look, if there was one guy who I needed to get me a key catch in a key situation in a big game, he's the guy of all the wide receivers in the league right now, and it's loaded with some fantastic ones. He's the guy who I would go with. I have said numerous times, he's the only wide receiver who right now, who I think from a physical perspective, really just straight up punks other defensive backs. They look scared when they go up against him because of how physical he is, and he's just someone who just seems so steady and so reliable. I'm gonna go with him, and I think he would be able to put up numbers regardless of the quarterback that he played with too.
Lewis, we're right here, Lewis. Look, I'm going to agree with you on this, Michael Thomas. You know, he's missed one game in his career so far. In four years, he has just over 5,500 yards. I mean, that's ridiculous. Every single year, he's going to go over 1,000. You know that. Doesn't matter who's throwing him the football. And I think it's his consistency, his route running, just how sharp he is. And he seems like a true professional. I don't know him personally, but it just seems like he attacks every single day as a new day. He's trying to be the best wide receiver in the NFL. That's why I have him as my number one.
Yeah, guys, I think it's amazing. You could say the same exact things about either one of these guys. This is like picking between your two favorite ice cream flavors, right? If you're picking out a dessert. I mean, these are tough questions today because we love both of these players so much. But I think they're both playing the position at an extremely high level, and it really just comes down to a matter of which one you enjoy watching more. And I think it's a close call, but I went the other way.
Also, we wouldn't want to forget about Julio Jones. 6 straight 1,000-yard seasons, tied with Mike Evans for the longest active streak in the NFL. But most importantly, when the heck are we going to see all these guys on the field? That's the big question. Commissioner Roger Goodell said yesterday that the first phase of reopening was successful. Up to 50% of team employees, mostly on the business side, allowed back into buildings. The next phase is expected to include the return of coaching staffs.
We continue to see team facilities open for staff as part of our phase one reopening process, prioritizing obviously public health and safety for all of our employees and in compliance with local and state guidelines. And we're hopeful that we'll be able to bring coaches by next week at the end of phase two of our opening. We also mentioned to the clubs that we will be extending our virtual off season at least 2 more weeks. We are doing everything to ensure a safe return for our players, not only to the facilities, but also to training camps, preseason games, and of course the start of the regular season. That's the highest priority we have.
Dan, what's next in the reopening process for the NFL?
You know, it doesn't sound overly exciting, but the next thing is, as of Monday, teams in markets where they're allowed to be in the building can open their ticket offices, their team stores, etc. But what people want to know is, when are the coaches and players going to be back? And the NFL's next step is to find a way to get coaches back in the building. And they have said no team's coaches are going to be allowed back in the facilities until all team's coaches are allowed back in the facilities. So they have to make sure that in all of their markets, it's okay with the local and state governments that the buildings be open. Once that happens, they're gonna start phasing in coaches and allow them to be in the building. And then once that process is complete, they're going to talk about players and when they come back. Key dates on that, though. The off-season program, meaning OTAs, minicamps, can't run, per an agreement between the league and the Players Association, can't run past June 26th. So it seems unlikely they'd have players in before that. So now you look ahead to training camps, which, Susie, as you know, traditionally start in late July, and trying to make a plan for how you can do that safely. But right now it's about trying to get the coaches in the building and then make a plan for training camp.
Yeah, let's just hope at least when training camps are ready to start, that can at least feel normal. John Harbaugh insists they aren't necessarily going to throw more, and the offense certainly won't be conventional. But Jackson does need to take advantage of what the defense is giving them. Harbaugh said that one of the keys to Jackson's evolution is taking advantage of defenses stacking the box. Quote, Those corners are going to be one-on-one, and those safeties are going to be one-on-one against receivers, especially on some downfield throws. And we have to make them pay for it. We absolutely have to make them pay. The ability to make them pay for tilting their defense towards stopping our run game with a really, really efficient passing game. I do believe that's the next step of this offense. I really do believe Lamar is going to take the next step. Well, the Ravens' offense was dominant last season, but they didn't exactly need to rely on Jackson's deep ball. He had just 80 pass attempts that traveled 15 or more air yards, the 24th most in the league. Although Lamar made those attempts count, his 13 touchdowns at that distance trailed only Dak Prescott and Jameis Winston. So think of how dangerous Jackson was, and then add taking the deep ball game to another level. But Rob, are you buying that the Ravens are going to throw deep this season?
It's all smoke and mirrors to me. I feel like they're going to continue to do the things that they did well last year. I mean, look, MVP, terrific season. I think the number one thing that Lamar Jackson has to do is protect himself better. I mean, last year he led, of all quarterbacks, he was hit 181 times. That's 40 more times than the next highest guy. So if they want to continue to be successful and push the ball down the field, like Harbaugh says, he's got to stay healthy. He can't take unnecessary hits. He can't be running into contact every single time he's trying to get extra yardage. He just has to be smarter. I think that is going to be the next development stage in his career is, look, if I'm by the sidelines, maybe I just get out and don't have to get the extra two. If I'm running down the middle of the field and I know it's time to just give it up, let me get down on the ground and slide. They're trying to protect these quarterbacks, but not when you're out of the pocket.
Yeah, I believe John when he says that they're going to throw the ball more. I don't think they're going to actually call more pass plays overall and throw their run-pass balance, run-pass ratio, you know, all out of whack. I just think he's really going to encourage Lamar Jackson that, hey, look, you need to be able to quickly, you know, determine that you have a one-on-one that's favorable to you, and when you do, let it go. Just put it up there and let it go. Marquise Brown can outrun anybody. Devin Duvernay, who they drafted from Texas this year, who's going to play in the slot like he did at Texas. This is a 10-1, 10-flat 100-meter guy. He's a state champion sprinter in the state of Texas. So, I mean, they have the horses outside to go ahead and make people pay when you stack the box and you do go single high safety and go one-on-one on the outside. He just needs to let it go. And I think that's really what he's saying. And if he does that, I mean, look out. Look out for this offense, because are you really going to want to keep playing one-on-one against guys that can run like that? Of course not.
Yeah, Lewis, I'm with you. I'm thinking back to last summer when we heard John Harbaugh quotes about an offense that was going to look different and revolutionize the game, and we thought, this just talk, right? It's going to be run, run, run. And it turned out to be this incredible machine that dominated the league, and the quarterback won MVP. So if John Harbaugh is telling me it's going to evolve again, I'm willing to believe that he and Greg Roman and Lamar Jackson are going to be able to evolve it further. Just because Jackson is an MVP already does not mean he's not still a young, developing player whose ceiling is higher than where he is right now. So I believe it. I'm coming out in the draft. There were evaluators that compared him to Michael Vick. You don't compare a guy to Michael Vick just because he can run. Michael Vick had a cannon. So I think there are people out there that do believe that Lamar Jackson can make the throws down the field. And if it happens, if John Harbaugh is telling us the truth again, I don't know why we would be surprised.
But Rob, while the Ravens are upping their offensive game, as a defender, what is it you're studying in the offseason to stop Jackson in this offense? What would be the key?
I mean, you just have to stop their 21 personnel. When they have their two tight ends on the field, you have to be able to stop the run on both sides of the football on the edge. When they're able to stretch the field out like they do, it's almost impossible for guys to play their responsibilities, because then somebody's trying to do somebody else's job. When two people are trying to do somebody else's job, that's when you have the big open gaps and those big plays that you see in the running game. So, I mean, number one, you got to stop the run. If you can't stop the run in the NFL, why throw the ball? Just continue to run it down people's throats. I mean, that also takes your soul away as a defender. When you can't stop the run, it's one of the worst feelings.
And Harbaugh used this Titanic metaphor to illustrate the difference between last year's team and this year. He said, at this time last year, the Ravens were the iceberg, you know, waiting unseen to sink other teams. Not anymore. Everybody knows they're there.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails.
Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Then Niners wide receiver Emmanuel Sanders, who is now a member of the Saints. Emmanuel, it's so great to have you back on the show. So that Kittle play there at the end, what did it look like from your perspective? Where were you?
I had a shallow cross, and I remember looking, and I remember just going, run, because the game was on the line. And, you know, Kittle has come through play after play after play. So right now I'm seeing him run, and I'm just like, I'm really looking, seeing him cross the 50, seeing if we're in field goal range. And then I saw the face mask and the flags, and I was like, we just won this game. Because it was definitely a high-scoring game. I remember, I think they got up on us like 14 points, and we were trying to battle back, and it was Kyle Shanahan versus Sean Payton, and they're just dialing up play after play after play. And it was definitely probably one of the best games I've been a part of.
So what do you think? One of the best games you've been a part of, but what would you say is the most memorable moment from that game? What sticks with you?
For me, getting on the bus going to sleep because I was so exhausted from the emotions of the game and for playing. But obviously, you know, I had some big plays in that game. I had the 75-yard pass in which Jimmy gave me an opportunity, threw the ball up in the air, and then the pass. You know, I've been fortunate enough to throw two touchdown passes in my NFL career. Really, I've thrown three passes, and I'm right now I'm 1,000%, you know, 100% completion. You know, I haven't thrown an incompletion yet, but definitely that pass was definitely one of those moments, because leading up to that, you know, in practice, I couldn't complete it for nothing. And then I got in the game and was able to do it. And so right there, you see me with my hand up like, thank God, you know, it was a completion and a touchdown.
That's so cool. I was going to ask you about that, what it was like installing it. So what's the intel, you know, like how does Kyle know that you can throw a pass like that? How does that all develop?
I think it comes a little bit, you know, we will go through walkthroughs or when we're doing drills, like I'll take the ball and throw the ball. And I've always acted like I was a quarterback throwing the ball. Like when I'm running back or jogging back, I would throw the ball to a lineman or somebody and just flick it. And so I guess Kyle saw that I could throw the ball, and he implemented it. It's crazy. We had that play in for like 2 or 3 weeks. And then we finally dialed it up. I actually had a couple, like actually one or two more pass plays that it was one pass play we had that we practiced like for 6 weeks, but never even dialed it up. So he definitely had it off in his portfolio, ready to expose, you know, whenever he wanted to.
When he dialed it up, what were your emotions like?
I was telling myself, please complete it, because Kyle told me pretty much, he said he was going to be wide open. And so, you know, I had to go into quarterback mode pretty much, because if he wasn't going to be open, I had to either throw the ball away or try to run the ball, but don't take a loss, don't take a sack. And so that was in my mind. And, you know, I really didn't see Raheem because I had somebody rushing at me, but I saw just a little glimpse of him to be able to get the ball up in the air. And, thank God he was able to catch it and score, because I think we were down 14 at that time.
This game had 10 touchdown passes, 12 total TDs. You hauled in one of Jimmy G's four passes. This really was Garoppolo's signature game, because up until then, everybody talked about the Niners' defense, and this was the opportunity for the offense to shine. So what did that feel like for you guys after this game?
It felt good. I would say because, you know, we – that was a road trip, because we flew to the East Coast. We played against Baltimore. We had Baltimore and New Orleans back-to-back. And so we flew to Baltimore. We played against the Ravens. Then we went to Florida. We camped out in Florida for a week. And then we played in New Orleans, and we knew what was on the line. We knew that number one seed was on the line. And so, you know, to be able to go out there and handle business and get on that plane and win, it was everything.
All right, let's update a couple things. You were on the show with us a couple of weeks ago, and you were really just getting into the Saints playbook. How's that going? Where's your comfort level?
Drew texted me last week and said that we're going to possibly link up and throw. And so I think, you know, eventually I'll get there. But, you know, until you really get you know, into the feel of things and understand, you know, how Drew wants me to be or where he wants me to be or how he wants me to run a specific route. You know, there's the, like X's and O's is just X's and O's. So I'm looking forward to those times. You know, hopefully it'll be coming up here soon.
So what do you think the plan is? You know, like earlier in the show, we were talking about when training camp might start. You know, the NFL goes dark for a period of time before training camp. I mean, do you have any sort of sense? Because you obviously you want to get with him, right? You want to get with him before training camp, don't you?
Yeah, and I think we're going to be able to do that. You know, obviously with the coronavirus situation, you know, but states are starting to open up. People are starting to move around. And so hopefully we'll be able to link. You know, when he texted me, he said possibly in June or July. And so I'm waiting on him to figure out the date. And hopefully we all can get together as a team and run some routes and spend 2 or 3 days together. That'd be awesome because I remember 14 when I was with Peyton Manning, you know, every offseason we met down at, you know, Duke, and we just trained down there for like 2 or 3 days. We ate dinner, we hung out, we was able to develop that team camaraderie. So I don't know what Drew wants to do, but, you know, like I told him through the text message, wherever and whenever, just let me know and I'm there.
Wherever and whenever. We know that chemistry and timing means so much. Manuel, so great to see you again. Thanks for spending some time with us. A lot of fun.
Great to see you as well.
Our own Dan Graziano released his quarterback commitment rankings on ESPN.com. Dan constructed this to show how financially committed a team is to their quarterback. At the top, it's Jared Goff, Ryan Tannehill, and Kirk Cousins. Some interesting names near the bottom, Lamar Jackson, Jimmy Garoppolo, Matthew Stafford among them. Dan, how'd you break this down?
So you really tried to focus on the contract, right? How much money is guaranteed? When do those guarantees pay out? What year would be the soonest the team could get out of the contract if it wanted to? And how much dead money would it cost them if they did? Those kinds of things. So trying to figure out how locked in these guys are. So obviously the Ravens are not moving on from Lamar Jackson anytime soon, but he's only signed for 2 more years on a rookie deal that wasn't even fully guaranteed because he was the number 32 pick. So he's down near the bottom of the list because if something happened and the Ravens did want to move on from him, they could. Near the top of the list, Jared Goff, Ryan Tannehill, who just recently signed a deal with massive guarantees, Kirk Cousins, who seems to do that every couple of years. So just an exercise in trying to figure out how sort of married each team is to its quarterback according to the contract.
Let's take this a little further then. Jared Goff tops the list after a hefty investment by the Rams. He's signed through the 2024 season, earning an average of $33.5 million per year. But Dan, if Goff were to struggle, like when could the Rams realistically get out from under his contract?
Realistically, it's probably not until the 2023 offseason because as of this past March, 2 months ago, he got an extra guarantee of $27.5 million of his contract became fully guaranteed in 2021 and a $15.5 million roster bonus in 2022 also became fully guaranteed. So the dead money charge, if they wanted to escape the deal in the spring of 22, would be prohibitive, and they would be on the hook for $15.5 million that year for a guy that would theoretically no longer be playing for them. So, yeah, he's going to be there a while unless they could somehow trade that contract. But obviously, if they were in a position to do that, it might not be so appealing to a potential new team either.
So, Lewis, what do you think the Rams are thinking about this deal now?
Yeah, Susie, I think maybe if they had a chance to do it over again, they would allow themselves some ability to maybe get out of a contract, especially in the case of underperformance. But I think given the fact that he was playing so well and he really seemed to hit it off well, and he did hit it off well. It's not that he seemed to. He did hit it off well with Sean McVay. I feel like they feel as though they had their franchise quarterback, and I think they still do feel like they have their franchise quarterback. I know, look, this offense is structured to really run through the running game, and then the passing game comes off of that in the form of different types of movement passes as far as changing the launch point and really pushing the ball down the field off a play-action pass. And they still feel as though Jared is good enough to do that and good enough to do that at a high level. And just remember this. He hits one of two passes that he misses against New England in the Super Bowl down in Atlanta. You're talking about the Rams being the Super Bowl champion. He missed two throws in that game that were just inches away maybe from them being Super Bowl champions. And we may be talking about Jared in a much different light right now. And Sean still seems to have a lot of confidence in what he can do within this offense given how young he still is.
Look, when you look at the contract situation, the Rams are stuck. They're in a bad spot right now. And then they overpaid a running back. They're hurting that position as well from doing that. So when you overpay somebody, look, in the NFL, a lot of these guys are paid on potential and not production. There's plenty of guys that are very productive that teams don't want to pay because they want to see what the next few years are going to be. They want to pay the young guys that have a potential to be one of the best. And they paid him on potential. He had one good year. Yeah, he had a good year, a solid year. But defenses adjust. As a defender, I understand when you go into a game plan, you look at all the weaknesses throughout the last season, the last few games, and you try to exploit those things, and you try to take away the things and make a quarterback think. And we saw that in the Super Bowl against the Patriots. Look, he missed a couple throws, but he missed those throws. And when you're paid like a number one quarterback, you're supposed to make all those throws. So, you know, moving forward, I think the Rams are in a tough spot. And you lose a few weapons, you lose some burners. Like Cooks, you lose a guy that can get up the field. That hurts your quarterback. And not to mention, their offensive line is pretty old. You know, they're an older offensive line. So if you can't protect him and he's in a bad spot, and look, with the contract situation, I think the Rams are just I think they missed their opportunity. I'll put it that way.
Well, we'll see. They've also made lots of changes to the staff. We'll see if that pays off for Jared Goff. Final stop here on NFL Live. The NFL and EA Sports announced yesterday that they have agreed to continue the Madden franchise for at least the next 6 years. Lamar Jackson is set to grace the cover of Madden 21, although EA Sports has not made the official announcement yet.